So I'd like to talk about our deeper nature, coming into what's more deeply natural, even more natural than natural. I heard that quite some years ago now in England, that time with the mad cow disease, when so many cows were killed. And then the fields, therefore, were left without cows. And so they grew in a different way, not being eaten so much. There came, apparently, species of flowers that had been thought to have disappeared from England, came out of the ground by themselves. And so this is an example from actual regular nature. We've gotten used to a certain routine, so these are fields because there are cows. That's why these are fields and not forests. So we got used to having fields and cows, and then the cows were taken out of that ecosystem. And with nothing more than that, something precious came by itself that we thought had disappeared. So I find it a good metaphor for spiritual path or practice, where first we can notice that we've gotten used to living a certain way. It's not the only way. And then sometimes either we decide to make a change, or life comes in and a change happens. So in this case, the cows were killed, and so they didn't eat so much. Sometimes life happens that way, and sometimes we grow that way. We might start to decide to have fewer and fewer cows for some other reason. And then wonder, oh, what is that weird flower? It's very similar to what happens as we start to notice how I'm living is not the only way. And either life happens and I think it's a tragedy, and there is tragedy in that. And life continues also, strangely. And in the life continuing after the shock or the loss or the change, there starts to be evidence of different kinds of life. And so I like the metaphor of practice as a stopping of doing something, a taking away of an extra element, or a letting go of. So it's not that we're trying to add flowers to the ecosystem. That would tend to get complicated. But leaving room and noticing that life continues. And usually giving that much more time than we feel comfortable, then there's a sign of something different, something precious, something we thought we'd lost, that grows by itself. It comes up by itself and it flowers by itself. So here on retreat, so far we have the chance Am I too fast? It's okay. It's okay. Just coming more in touch with our biology, with the physical body. The mind is still going on, and we start to notice that mind and body maybe aren't two separate things, but mostly we're just coming to notice the biology. How do I know there's a body? I can feel the ground. What is that? How do I know I can feel the ground? It's like we're starting to find, like an insect has the antenna. We're starting to find our feelers, our antenna, our ways of noticing and discovering our more direct experience. For now, mostly body. Not as an adding something to our ecosystem, but as simplifying our ecosystem. Gradually coming into this ecosystem of the body, which is full of creatures, of course, like literally it's an ecosystem. It's not an exaggeration. I've heard that we have more creatures inside us than there are human beings on the planet. I don't know. Coming in touch with the physicality, the physical, the body. To simplify, we start to contact another kind of life that is not biology only. It's not the body, but it's not only the body. It's not afraid of death. And it also isn't born. And it's not something we have to create or make up or force or hold on to. Just making room and letting it be there. And letting our system find a way to receive that aliveness. So a most simple example of the day could be a sound or an out-breath. That certainly happens. There's no need to say that's not real. And it happens with so much detail, it would take us 10 pages to describe 1 second of birdsong. But if we stop and go into the describing part of the mind, we've lost track of that receiving mind. So in that bird song that's already gone, that's already gone, it's already gone again. There's not only an impression of a certain pitch and a certain volume and so on. There's not only the impression of things we could measure and describe. There's also some other kind of impression that's somehow not limited to that little sound. Some kind of whiff, we have in English the word. I have no idea in French how I say whiff. But whiff is really about a smell.
Sorry, I didn't get the word.
Yeah. Whiff it doesn't sound at all. It sounds more of the German side of English, but I don't know.
If
this morning during both morning meditations, there were definitely scents, smells in the air. That if you just walked into that smell and the first breath, that would be kind of like a whiff of that smell. Or it could even be a little bit less noticeable of the smell. But it's that kind of, it's definite, but it's not overwhelming. So the sound is definite and we can't catch it. It's the sound of a particular life, of a particular body, a particular being, that voice. That if we knew this place well and we knew the creatures well, we could probably recognize that dove is different from that dove. Which is a lovely capacity of a human being that we can recover. But also, there's something just wrapped in the dove voice that's maybe wider. And so we can wonder about what is it that we could do? What can we practice? What is good spiritual practice? What difference does it make? To help us be with both that simple, real dove voice and the whiff of aliveness or the unborn or the deathless in that limited sound. So certainly there's in the very moment of receiving a sound, kind of more simply or purely, how would you describe that when a sound just comes and there's nothing extra? Can anyone find a word or two? Okay, pure. And what does pure feel like in the body tissue?
Sweet.
Sweet, mm-hmm.
And fluid.
Lively. Mm-hmm. Can you feel the liveliness? Is it in the response? Is it a response to the sound? Is it in the meeting, the directness? Is it possible to tell?
What's in the meeting?
Mm-hmm.
And the effect on the body.
So it's two, isn't it?
Two.
So there's two kind of livelinesses. How would you say in French? Lively.
Vive.
Vivant. And you can't say vivance, though. How would you say liveliness? Okay.
It's a new word.
Okay.
Why not?
In our practice, we can start to feel when there's that direct kind of electric, just the meeting in the moment, the immediacy sound. That's can be almost shocking sometimes, even if it's a little sound, even if it's a lovely sound, etc. But in the immediacy of the meeting, there's not time yet for lovely, quite. It's so direct and simple, there can be a kind of, which is important because one of the big things our practice does is it helps us bear that voltage, the power of that. and not turn away. Not try to get away from the intensity. And that's a practice. It takes, we grow in that. It's not, if we try to make ourselves bear that from the very first moment, we can't actually handle that. So it's lovely that we grow there. And then there's also the yes in the cells to allowing the directness, as well as to sounds that maybe we like. There's an opening that could ripple through that is not just, I like this sound, which is more addictive. Like, I like this sound, confirmed, this is good. That's fine. It's not pleasure. It's a certain kind of pleasure.
Is it some kind of recognition, to recognize something?
I think, good question. This is very intense, but I think that we're still talking before recognition, actually. It's so direct, the mind hasn't had time to say bird. Mm-hmm. And there's something in that that's intense, but that we're made for that. And that's one way of practicing towards growing wisdom, is letting there be direct meeting with life. And then also before recognition, the goodness of allowing the meeting, it ripples through. Mm-hmm. Then there's, okay, recognition, bird, oh, I love birdsong. That's not wrong. The food is good, thank goodness. I like the taste of some of the food, good. And this is another way that we can practice that's very grounded and simple and deep. How is it when I get what I want? I get what I like. I like that sound of that bird. I like that taste of that food. There is a goodness. It's not wrong. We're not trying to stop that. But let's actually feel, what is that goodness like? If you think of your favorite, what you think of as your favorite food, and when you have that, to actually be present with the tasting of it and the texture in your mouth and everything, the effect on your body afterwards. What is that goodness and that pleasure like? And knowing the difference between that pleasure, which sometimes is exactly what we need to kind of come into alignment. Ah, okay. It's been a hard day. Let's have a cup of tea. It's not wrong. It can be the appropriate move. But then this other kind of liveliness in direct contact, in simple receiving experience. Allowing both kinds of pleasure or goodness, we start to grow again, our feeling capacity grows. And we can feel our way, which is a different kind of knowing. We think of knowing as being about words and thoughts. I should know what I know. I should be able to think it through. We're talking about a different kind of knowing. And this is the first thing that Gautam Buddha says is one of the fruits of good practice. Is this another kind of knowing? And it goes together with the word he uses is deliverance. What would be a deliverance? Deliverance?
Okay.
Good, easy one. I think for us, deliverance, apart from being the title of that movie from long ago, if you're... it maybe sounds religious or something. And so for me, what we can feel the meaning of the word deliverance as, And that keeps it right next to that nonverbal knowing. We don't have to go anywhere. They go together. feeling our way along, feeling the difference between a known pleasure and the pleasure of immediacy, which is really a not knowing. By having space from my bird watcher that wants to name the bird as fast as possible, like a game, and just hearing. So we can actually practice with what, for now, what is direct contact like? What does it feel like? And we can play with other ways of knowing, also intuition. So here the situation is very simplified. And so it can highlight, okay, intuition, where shall I do my walking meditation? Not what shall I eat, but how much salad? Shall I have seconds or thirds or fourths? And we can play with different layers of intuition, when it's more mental and when it's more fluid. When we can allow it to just be less verbal and more of a happening. How is that? And when it's a bit more, oh, I don't know, maybe I should, I don't know, maybe I should do that. Or maybe, oh, more verbal, more thinking, more complicated. Playing with it, whatever's possible. Working with intuition is another way to kind of go deep down into this liberating way of knowing. That goes with ah. If we could feel the fields without the weight of the cows and without the crushing of their hooves and without the grazing, the tearing. Could feel that situation from the point of view of the fields, of the earth and the plants. Ah. And so during the day and the night, feeling for moments of where there's a kind of shift, which could be a physical shift of posture where you come more into alignment. You remember it's your life and you could experiment with resting back or letting the forehead relax. Even if it doesn't completely relax, that little bit relaxed. Ah. And so not looking for a big experience of ah. That deliverance also is misleading because it sounds like the end of the story. Practicing is not about an end of a story. It's finding a sustainable flow, a good momentum. We can also feel for the inner shifts where we realize, ah, I'm having a hard day because I keep thinking I'm doing it wrong. That's actually why it's a hard day. The day itself is not really a problem. It's that unquestioned thought that I'm doing it wrong. And so easily then we could say, oh, I'm wrong for thinking I'm doing it wrong. So letting that thought come around the back door. But we could just go, wow, kind of catch that animal softly but firmly. What is this belief that I'm doing it wrong? Like, where are the feet? Where are the roots? What is it eating? It's eating up our life energy. Where is it starting from? Or just like, and maybe we can feel it would like a different kind of food instead of our heart. Maybe we'd actually like to just listen to the birds for a while without calling them birds. But that really a sense of stroking that most dangerous creature, the belief that I'm wrong. And feeling its fear and the fear moving it, to attack and defend and just. And other times it's not me that's wrong, it's everybody else or somebody else or the world or God or the situation. And we could still find that creature of wrongness, some kind of blame. Just belief that there's something wrong. And it's a certain kind of being strong and confident and gentle. That this is not you alone dealing with that sense of wrong. This is in a human being. And there are reasons why this sense of wrongness gets going, gets activated, takes over. And we can gradually find out why. We can find out the roots, the origin, the cause. Not by hurting that scared animal of wrong. Partly by feeling how upset it is, how unsettled. We can also feel for in the past and during the day moments where there is not the sense of wrong. There can be, I call it a moment where there's not a sense of demand, no demand. So there's not a sense that there's a demand on you, that you must be different before you're allowed to be here. You should behave a certain way to belong, to be okay. So there can be that experience, and there has been, all of you have had that, even if you can't find it right now. That you don't need to be different to be here. No demand on you. And also, from yourself, no demand on the others or the outside. They can be as they are. We like and we don't like. They can be as they are. So these moments happen. It's an uncovering of our deeper nature. And so getting the taste of that, remembering that, bringing it on, kind of. Is another way of feeling, this other way of knowing that's ah. So I'm not saying to pretend. It's not to pretend that you don't mind. And not to pretend that you think, oh, I'm fine. I must be fine because I'm supposed to be fine. That's another kind of demand. The cool thing is that even when I notice there is demand on myself, I expect myself to sit still through the meditation. If I don't, I'm disappointed. And I'm not supposed to have expectations, so I'm also disappointed that I have one. I'm going to pretend I don't. But I'm still going to be mad at myself for not sitting still. We could rather feel, wow, I heard and I believed there shouldn't be expectation. What's going on about expectation? What's my experience with expectation? Oh, look, here's one. Here's an expectation. I should stay awake during the meditation. If I sleep during the meditation, I feel upset. Something's wrong. I assume something's wrong. Rather, I can start to feel, where is actually the friction? The friction is between my belief I shouldn't sleep in the meditation and the fact that I just did. That's the friction. It doesn't mean there's something wrong with sleeping. It doesn't mean there's something wrong with the fact that there was that idea Can we just recognize that was an idea that was in conflict with what happened? And that's all. It's actually not a problem. Then I might start to have a question. What is this about sleeping or staying awake? I thought we were going for awakening and the teacher's snoring up there. We can let the deeper questions go deeper. What does awakening mean? It doesn't mean stay awake 24 hours. It's a deeper nature that is awake. It's not something that we have to wake up. And it's learning, practicing towards bearing the awakeness that is. It's not trying to keep my eyes open. There are eyes that are open and at rest. And then you have this big challenge. It sounds easy. Oh, we can rest, we can lie down. We can practice how we think is good, but it's actually it's a big challenge. So to find your willingness to feel what's a good momentum, what gives you good momentum, what's a good way of practicing for you, what gets you into a good flow, what helps. And it's not to come to a conclusion in the instant. To find out, if I sleep in the meditation, how does that go? We need a few days, at least. We might need a few months, we might need a few years. The cool thing is that not only will we start to get to know, how is sleeping in the meditation for me? How does that go? How does it happen when I'm actually rested? For many people, by the way, it happens. There's this whole other, the trap door, the floor falls out and we find meditation. But along the years, still, we're not sure. How much rest, how much activity, activation, energy, what kind of energy. It's not only that we start to, that's an art, that we get to know ourselves and restedness and activation, energy, different streams of energy, how that comes into alignment and how that goes. Not only do we get better at that art, we get more skillful. Along the way, we also start to drop down into the really even more important questions and places. So just briefly, I want to say that when I'm talking about finding a good way of practicing, getting into a good flow, there's a really easy example from real life, just in terms of lifestyle. What you eat, when you sleep, how much you sleep, who you hang out with, etc. When you notice that you're in a downward spiral, you're going in a bad way, so to say, bad negative momentum, with eating or with exercise, for example, or with who you hang out with, or how your job goes. Isn't it that it takes quite some energy to do the first step of like, okay, today I'll go on a walk even if it's only 5 minutes. Because why? If I do it because I think I should, because I'm bad and wrong, it's not going to last. I might do 1 day, 2 days, 3 days, but it's not going to last because it's still part of the negativity. I'm wrong, so I've got to do better. But I go on the walk, and either once I'm walking or even before, I love walking. I love what happens in my mind with that simple rhythm. I love seeing the people on the street or the nature or whatever. And by walking, we remember, oh, that's good. And that's the beginning of the good momentum. And then we feel better. There's less room for that wrongness creature to take over. And then maybe we eat a little bit differently and we have more energy. We go to sleep earlier and we go on a walk in the morning. Ah, I've never done that before. How lovely. And it builds a momentum. So the beginning can be really hard. We might need people to come and come with me, make me go on a walk. And then after a while, there's no stopping us. We wouldn't want to do anything else. It's our happiness. It's a happy way of living. And then even the day we can't go on a walk because events got in the way, we're not devastated. It's not, oh my God, I'm wrong because I didn't walk. I still have that momentum with me that carries through this busy day of no walk or broken leg or whatever. So feeling for what gets us into a good flow, that we develop our capacity to feel our way along into alignment, into ah. And from ah, even more capacity to feel more wisely and more quickly, more instantly, without thinking it through, just happening. So I'd like to share parts of a teaching that Gautam Buddha gave. In India, long ago. And he was not the only teacher walking around in not very much clothing at the time. There were many, many. It was a whole scene. And one time he was staying near Shravasti, and so was another guy, another teacher. And one of the students of Gautam Buddha, who was a carpenter, but quite devoted to his meditation practice and his path, when he was walking out of town towards where Gautam Buddha and his followers were staying to go and hear some teachings, and then he realized, oh, it's not really the right time of day. I'll be disturbing them if I go now. So maybe I'll go and see that other teacher over there for now. And it's also funny in the text how the text describes the other teacher. It's not a very positive light. First of all, he's called a wanderer rather than a teacher. And the way it's described is there's a large assembly of wanderers who are making an uproar, which is like a lot of noise. Loud, not only making an uproar, but loudly and noisily talking many kinds of pointless talk. So there might have come some little bit of prejudice into the text over the few hundred years that passed before it was written down. But there's the sense that this is not a silent gathering. And maybe they're not quite on the points that make a difference in their talk. And the leader of them sees the carpenter coming and says, hey, everybody, be quiet. There's one of those followers of Gautam Buddha. They like silence. Maybe if we're quiet, he'll come over here. And so they were all quiet. And he came over to their big group. And they did their respectful greetings. And then without any question, they just sat down and the teacher gave a teaching to the carpenter, saying that when someone has these four qualities, I call them completely wholesome, finished, complete, perfected, invincible. That means they can't be conquered. They can't. No one else can be better than they. And they've got the supreme attainment. They have the highest that you can get. And so this teacher, who obviously we know is going to lose, what he thinks are the four ultimate achievements of a human being, are is that there's no negative bodily action. So no action with the body that's negative, evil, he says. No words that are negative, evil. No intentions that are negative, destructive, deadening. And also the way that the person earns their living is not destructive or deadening, or they use the word evil in the text. When someone has these four things, so no action, no word, no intention, and the way of making a living, the livelihood, is not negative. That's the supreme. The carpenter listens and doesn't say anything. He doesn't say, oh, that's lovely, or what are you talking about? He just listens quietly, and then he gets up and goes to his teacher, to the Gautama Buddha. Now it's a good time. And he explains the whole conversation. And Gautama says, if those were the four best qualities that a human being could have, then every newborn baby is already finished, complete, supreme attainment, perfected. Because a newborn baby doesn't have any possibility of controlling the body and doing something evil, destructive. They might accidentally bump something, but they can't say any word, so how could they say an evil word? And the way it's interesting, I have questions about people assuming that we can guess a newborn baby's mind state, but it's interesting description that Gautama Buddha gives. So a young, tender infant lying down does not even have the idea of a body. How could it do an evil bodily action? A young, tender infant lying down is just wriggling around. A young, tender infant lying down doesn't even have the idea of speech, doesn't have the idea of intention, and doesn't have the idea of livelihood, of course. That, I think we can accept that one. Maybe there's something more that a human being could grow into. So sometimes we do need to kind of rewind and recover our innocence and kind of be like a baby lying on the ground, just discovering movement, discovering what is speech, what is this voice, and what is an intention. And then also that little bit more we can say gross or rocky or practical question, how to make a living, how to get by. Is the way that I make a living, is that harmonious? Does that fit me? Does that fit the world? So we can kind of come back to, and it can happen in resting, that we have visits from childhood experiences. We get into a resting state, and there might come a memory of being a child, which is what happened. That's how Gautama Buddha found his way. He was in a resting state of no demand, and he was desperate because he tried every possible way to practice and with no benefit. And then a memory came of his childhood, being in a resting state, feeling happy for no reason, no demand. No demand on me, no demand on the world, just feeling ourselves here. And that happiness that comes in that moment is our guiding force towards a good momentum, a good flow. So it's not to say it's wrong to kind of unwind back to a place that's less verbal and a place that's really discovering the body as if for the first time and wondering what are the many different kinds of intention. So there's there's that intention that I make with my mind. Okay, I'm going to be on time, or I'm going to stay up late tonight, or I'm going to jump into the river or whatever. And we may or may not. We know that that kind of intention is not very binding. when I make an intention, we know it doesn't quite have the power to make me follow through. It's not the same as doing it. The word in the Sanskrit and Pali for intention is not the same as our English word intention. In intention is there's attention towards in. I'm trying to get myself towards a good flow. I wish I could. It's okay, good start. But when we feel at ease, relaxed, at home on earth, kind of recovering that childlike place or even just the body animal at ease and empowered on the earth, at home, there can be a way of being moved, which could be the body moves. We just find ourselves walking along and it feels right, it feels good. Or there could be a movement in the mind, an idea comes that's really helpful, that really simplifies, it resolves what had been a complicated situation, that burden is gone. Ah. So just today, an old friend who happens to be here talked about a big shift that she experienced. In her relationship with her parents. And after that shift happened, she was walking down the street in a big city. It wasn't in an idyllic place, just walking down the street in the city. And she was looking around for, she'd forgotten something. What have I forgotten? That feeling that I had yesterday also. I know I've forgotten something. What is it? And then she realized what she'd forgotten was that heavy weight that she'd lived with until that day that was gone. So there's a kind of verbal intention, and then there's a being moved by. We don't know why, we don't know how. But it's got wisdom in it, it's got intelligence in it, it's got kindness, it's got flow. It's got sweetness. So then Gautam Buddha says, what I describe as someone who's really fulfilled the human life, who's not just come back to that good starting place of childlike or even wild animal-like, where we're actually just beginning to discover what we are. What is this? How do I know there's a body? What is this word power? What is this being moved? And how do I survive if I'm not acting from fear? So Gautam Buddha says that the actions of the body and the words, which really words includes what we say and also what we think, the whole word game, as well as how we make a living, all of those are habits. Until we're free, it's habit. What we do with our body and what happens in our mind is habit. It's programmed by the past. And we can start to feel unwholesome habits, which means it goes towards downward spiral, more heavy, less more demand, less access to intuition and feeling our way. And it can take quite some energy to dissolve our bondage to those unwholesome habits. And it's worthwhile and it's possible. But we can also feel, what is the reason for these unwholesome habits? What's the cause? And he said, the origin of unwholesome habits can be said to be in the mind, which is the heart mind. The heart that is affected by the past, there's hurt. There's parts of the heart that are bruised or broken. and the mind that is programmed to be busy, to be scattered, but certainly to be occupied. The origin of the difficult habit energies is in the heart mind. And even though he says there are many different aspects of mind, we can still say that basically when the mind, the heart mind, is affected by a sense of lack, so I was calling it wrongness before. And I would go then a step further. Why is there that sense of wrongness? And it's something I'd almost leave you with to start to feel your way. When there is a sense that something's wrong, either with me or with somebody else or the world or life itself, can we notice that that's operating? That program is on. Something's wrong. First noticing it, and then, this goes along with a sense of lack, a sense of not okay in the whole mind and heart. But why? Why is this program on? Why is it so easy to accept that programming? Why do we so easily accept that we're wrong or that they're wrong, when actually it's totally extra to the situation? And so I will partly leave you with the question, like, what comes before the sense of wrongness? What activates the sense of wrong? Not enough, not right, not okay. But we already referred to this earlier, that one part of coming into a state of lack, of stress, therefore, is a habitual turning away from the intensity and wide openness of our reality. So the mind affected by lack and turning away, ignoring the vastness, the brilliance, the intensity, also the uncontrollability of life. A mind affected by fear, we can say, and lack, goes for unwholesome habits. That's how it goes. When we come from fear and lack, it doesn't go well. Even when we feel like from fear and lack, I have these good intentions to do a good meditation retreat, to try my best, but we're coming from pressure, which is a disconnect from me, from life, it doesn't go well. The mind unaffected by lack and fear of what is, fear of that intensity, uncontrollability, the beauty, the brilliance, the vastness. The mind unaffected by fear goes into a good flow. And so we can really feel for the root. And if we're not careful, it'll be tricky, because we could say, oh my God, there's fear, I'm wrong, and then we're in the wrongness trap. What about, okay, there is fear, and I can feel it, I can feel where it is in the body, and I can feel the aliveness of the fear. I can feel how I don't have control over this fear. I can feel how this is a human fear, not mine. I didn't create it, I can't make it start or stop, but I can feel it. So it maybe is not what I am, it's in my experience. And that's one of those shifts of, it's just in my experience, actually in our experience. And it's not all. So sometimes we could feel for where there is less fear or not fear. We feel at ease, we feel at home, we feel belonging. And then it's easy to get into a good flow. Naturally it happens. So when we are aware of fear, not to then pretend there isn't fear. Being aware of fear, letting it be not what I think I am or my problem, what's wrong with me. It just is something I can feel. And it's not all. I can also feel the ground, my feet, I can hear the bird. It's a hard practice. In the beginning, it needs a lot of energy because our tendency is to go towards problem and lack and what's most noticeable. And fear is good at getting our attention. It's also good at kind of getting in all the cracks and being almost everywhere, but we feel through anyway for that sort of breath of aliveness. The breeze, the sound of the river, whatever. So the bodily actions, the words in thinking and spoken or heard, and the way of getting by, the way of making a living, the way of being in the world, we can find this deep guidance by tuning into what's lack and fear and what is no demand, a sense of completeness, sweetness, okayness. So rather than trying to change my habits on a superficial level, if I can get down into the root and feel for when fear operates, it goes like this and it doesn't work well. I feel uncomfortable in my skin and in the world and it doesn't, there's conflict. And when I tune into the possibility that there's nothing wrong, even though I feel uncomfortable, we start to grow a confidence. Maybe there's a way even when I'm not comfortable. There could be ease even with discomfort. And we find a way, and we find a way. And then there's this intention part, where sometimes the best we can do is, okay, actually, what do I want out of this situation? What is my expectation? Let's not pretend I don't have one. And other times we can soften and leave room to be moved and uncover a deeper guidance or leadership or intention. Gautam Buddha is saying that that deeper intention doesn't come from the mind. It's connected to perception. And so we can certainly play with this here, where sometimes you notice looking at the beautiful bamboo or whatever, there can be a way of looking at it from a place of problem or lack. Like, oh, I want to have that at my house. Or they have too much bamboo or whatever. Or isn't this, you know, something in us that feels not okay already wants to make it more special. So, oh, this is like the Zen stories or even a nice story that has an edge of stress. Comes from the mind. The mind of lack that's then a perception from a place of lack, problem or fear. And then the times where we can just play with, okay, even before the word bamboo, a kind of breeziness and directness of meeting with the eyes, with the ears, with the feeling capacity, with tasting, with smelling. We can play with seeing, allowing seeing to happen. Especially with things from nature, it can be much more easily uncomplicated. And a feeling of, it's not even me in my eyes. We can kind of clear our eyes of me and just let seeing happen. What is it that sees through these eyes? So that would be ways of practicing towards more free perception, full and complete in itself, nothing missing. And then even when the mind creeps in and said, oh, I would, if it were my place, I would prune that tree or weed that path or build something here or there, or I wish I could take that home, or whatever way the mind goes. Wanting or criticizing, for example. Even when that voice is going, there could be a kind of under the radar. Does that make sense to you?
No.
So there's the radar would be like the mind on alert for problem. But it doesn't reach everywhere. And so I guess it's a military phrase.
Yes.
The radar would be here, but if you fly under the radar, then the other side doesn't know you're crossing. So without making that into too much of an enemy, but accepting that it takes us as enemy, it's on alert for enemy. And so it is a kind of radar, but we can slide and glide under it. That even though the improving mind, the busy mind, the occupied mind is on, there's fear moving the mind, affecting the perceptions. There could still be a kind of as if I could see or feel my way through that and still receive the green, the white, the black, the brown. And then it's amazing how Gautama Buddha keeps going. So now we've found that we could grow out of our unwholesome habits, our destructive habit energies. We can find a way by feeling what comes out of fear, and what comes out of the mind that's unfearful. And it sounds like a huge project, because there is a lot of fear, deep fear, in the biology also. But it doesn't take much, a little opening of less fear, more okayness. Or even through the haze, the kind of fog of fear, that still I can feel my feet, still I can feel my intuition a little bit. Maybe that's enough to go on, to be guided by. And so then that we get into a better flow, and there start to be the, they call them wholesome habit energies, life-giving, sustainable way of living, where we have more energy for what we love most, for what makes life worth living, for what's fulfilling. And then Gautama Buddha asks the question, so now that we've got wholesome habits going more, we got the hang of kind of fear and not fear, uncovering the mind, letting it be unaffected by fear. So again, it's not like trying to implant a new mind. It's just calming that disturbing vibration of fear sometimes enough to get a sense of what is it like without that sense of lack. Or a problem, or not enough. What is it like with a sense of completeness or okayness, even a little bit? And things go well, we have good ideas, we start to feel better, what actually is fulfilling, what's good for me. And then Gautama Buddha asks, and what leads to the ending of the wholesome habits? He doesn't say that it would be a good idea, he just says that what comes next is the ending of the wholesome habits, which is really beautiful. Otherwise, it starts to be another kind of bondage. We're trapped in a new program. And what he's talking about and what we're talking about is freedom, which is a deep living trust in a life that is bigger than our biological life. So we make the step towards a better flow. That's not a downward spiral, but more expansive. We start to better sense the vastness and brightness and intensity and uncontrollability, the wildness. And so, okay, that doesn't kill me so far. It's unpredictable, but alive and fulfilling. And it's also beautiful because it's just allowing the good habits to continue, that they come to completion. We don't have to get rid of them. they come to an end by themselves. So you might come into a good flow with a certain meditation practice. Maybe you've been sitting for years, now you feel like lying down. It's the end of that good habit of sitting. Maybe you've been lying down for years, you feel like experimenting with sitting. Maybe it's the end of that good practice of just lying down, and it's a new phase. It comes to an end, and it comes into a much more alive, unpredictable, emergent happening that's not a program. It's not a bondage to being good. And yet it's trustworthy. It's wild and unpredictable. It's not a program. It's not determined by past. It's in touch with the living now, the immediacy, both the subtle and the gross, the physical and the ungraspable, the life and the aliveness. The way that, the mind with its then the body actions, the thinking and speaking and the way of making a living, the way that leaves behind even the good habits and comes into more freedom is that we notice the goodness. We notice that there's more kindness, there's better timing, more intuition, more skill with ourselves and other people. But we recognize that it's not me doing it right. Things go in a better way. No guarantee for success, but things go in a way that's more harmonious for myself and other people. But I know it's not mine, it's not me. It's just the way life is flowing through. And I also appreciate that. So you hear yourself saying something to a friend or not saying something just in the right time. And you're also thankful and appreciative of yourself or of that happening. You can feel the goodness of it, the sweetness, the ease, the fluidity. And with the intention being moved by life. The perception that just that light on the leaf comes across and has a completeness to it. Nothing missing. Even if the leaf is broken, there's not a sense of something wrong. The pure beauty of it, just as it is, the as-it-is-ness. Comes across, and the freedom of that being moved by, so the deeper intention and that more raw meeting in perception allows us to feel a great pleasure that then is our challenge to allow that pleasure, to allow what one teacher calls the basic goodness in the perception to be so good for no reason, not because it's beautiful, not because it fits my idea of leaf. It's much more surprising and shocking. And then later we could think, wow, that was so beautiful, though not perfect, that broken leaf. And that was so beautiful, now gone. I feel like I have it in every cell, but I can't get it back. So then we start to trust that feeling of having it in every cell. And it takes us deeper in where we can start to bear more and more that intensity and joy as a leading force. And then even takes us even deeper, still joyful, still pleasurable, but the mind starts to quiet down. The whole system starts to quiet down. And it's almost like going underwater and then getting used to actually staying underwater. First we go underwater like to visit, like how is it with less thinking?
Or if I thinking is going on up there, but I don't care. I'm really in the flow of the breath here. But after a while, it's as if we go underwater and there's not thinking and we can stay. And it's trustworthy and powerful and easeful. It doesn't cost us energy. Less and less believing and relying on words, and more coming into closeness with another way of knowing that's that's more home. And it's not just that, like the baby that hasn't yet learned to speak or move. It's that fresh and kind of almost blank and innocent, that much, leaving that much space for aliveness to come through. And it's a breathtaking discovery of a deep intelligence that can come into words when needed, but mostly it's not needed. So good. So we're each finding our way to feel for how is it with the mind unaffected by fear, stress, panic, lack, problem. Or even when affected by that sense of wrong, practicing feeling, what else? I can feel just the goodness of a little bit of my toe, just it pulsing alive, warm by itself. Uncovering, unaffecting, de-affecting the mind and the perceptions. To just allow us to come home into our sensitivity and presence, our feeling our way along towards more and more alignment, that we're more and more at ease with the simple, practical, ordinary, and the beyond, the unspeakable, the deathless. Are there any questions or anything to share?
That was very nice. Very interesting. What I understood is that we should not be afraid of changing.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
But we are always afraid, as we said, because of this social pressure mm-hmm. we've had.
So luckily, the fear is not our deep nature.
No.
It's added.
No, it's just social.
Well, it's social, biological, there's many layers of fear. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
None of them fit us.
Mm-hmm. No, not like this inside.
And so, luckily, it's not like taking out the heart and trying to live without the heart.
Mm.
It's something that's been added that we've managed to live with. And so it's just starting to realize we don't have to manage to live with and coming back into an alignment that's more natural. When it comes to the biological fear, there's a biological fear that keeps us quite alert, like what's going on, to stay safe. There's still a deeper nature that can be at ease and can trust only through experiencing for myself that even if I stop attending in that outgoing way to what I see, what I hear, etc., if needed, the movement will happen away from danger, if possible. It's not always possible.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow that knowing actually crosses the street when possible. And when danger and difficulty happen, which they do. It's not that we can avoid it, just getting that smart.
No.
Okay, it's not what we would wish on anyone, and there's a sense that this can be worked with wisdom for fruitfulness. It can be fruitful, though unfortunate, though difficult. So thank you very much for listening, for participating. It's really a privilege and honor to be here with you.